This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Oh, man, I thought they would win. I did not know that they would win like that. A 65-7 just absolute beatdown by the Georgia Bulldogs. They are your back-to-back national champions in college football. And boy, does everybody want to dissect this one in terms of its larger meaning. Because dissecting the game is rather pointless. Let's be honest. I mean, it would have been a lot more fun this morning to start this show with an idea of if we had a close game, like a 35-32 thriller at the end, to see where this broke down or that broke down and how this response and this response and everything that you would get sort of in a very meaningful close football game. But when you get a boat race like that, when you get a game that is so out of hand and so out of hand quickly, what are you going to say? Where did TCU fail, right? How did TCU lose a game like that? Well, because Georgia recruits better. That's basically the answer, right? It's not because this scheme didn't work or Kendre Miller wasn't in the game. You can't look at one or two moments in TCU's setup last night and say, well, that was the reason why they got blown out. Last night was one team with better football players than the other team. TCU has got a talented roster. There's no question about it. But when Georgia gets rolling, their talent is going to beat everybody in college football like they did this year. And nobody who they didn't play is capable of beating this team when everything's rolling. Ohio State had the best chance, and they missed a field goal. But TCU had no chance at all because Georgia clicked. And I don't know how Kirby Smart does it, to be honest with you. How he convinced a whole bunch of players who are on social media, who read things and see things and hear people talking in their own community. I have no idea how Kirby Smart convinced these kids that they have been disrespected all season. What, they showed a few clips of a few people saying, I don't know about Georgia this year. I like Tennessee. Because there's no way that team should have ever thought that they were less than the best football team in college football all year long.
When you said that, the first thing that popped in my mind were all the studio analysts.
Right.
You know, they pick their game and then pick their team and they show the logo. I don't think I saw one TCU.
Yeah. They're like, I couldn't fathom. I tried yesterday. I couldn't fathom a game in which TCU won, but I didn't think it would be 65-7. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I thought that they would blow them out like that. I thought that they would. If I was a betting person, I would have taken the spread. I would have taken the 14 points. I thought that they were that much better. But there is something about the way we desire something in sports, and sometimes that what we desire is just not going to become a reality. We love the Cinderella story. We always have. That's the one thing that sort of brings us together in if you don't have a dog in a fight in a game, is that we look at the Cinderella angle, and we sort of enjoy that story. TCU was a school that was picked to finish seventh in a 10-team conference. They were coming off a 5-7 year. They fired Gary Patterson, who had been the staple of that institution for a long time. There's a statue of him outside the stadium, for crying out loud. But they had to go in a different direction. But Sonny Dykes comes in, they start winning games, and before you know it, there's a lot of momentum. And when you have momentum and you have confidence, it breeds more wins. And before you know it, they're in this situation where beating Michigan sets himself up for the national championship. But the problem with Cinderella is, in certain sports, it's just not going to be a reality. And in college football, it's just not going to happen. Look, you go to college basketball, and even though we love the Cinderella aspect of the March Madness tournament, let's be honest, most of the time, it is a Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, Kentucky, whoever, that wins the championship, right? It's the teams that are in the top five, top 10 of college basketball. Every now and then, a VCU enters the Final Four, George Mason enters the Final Four, and Butler, for example, that first year that they played in the championship. You get those, of course, because the nature of the tournament is quirky enough that you catch a good run, and even if you're a St. Peter's, you can make it to an Elite Eight. But the reality of it is college football is way different. Now, TCU plays in a Power 5 conference. This wasn't a school from the Sun Belt that was playing in this thing. This was a Power 5 conference school. This was a school that won the regular season title of that conference. And even though they lost their conference championship game to Kansas State, they had still built up enough resume and enough goodwill with the people that sort of picked this thing to be selected as one of the top four teams in college football. And then that group, that committee said, here, Michigan, unbeaten team, do with what you will with that. And TCU beat them. And not only did they beat them matching them constantly throughout the game until there was no more time on the clock. But last night was different. Last night, you could see the disparity. You could see the two programs. One had stuff and the other didn't have stuff. And this is not a knock on the TCU players at all. I love Max Duggan. I thought his season was great. And Kendre Miller would have been somewhat effective, but nothing could have done. They could have brought every great TCU player in the history of the program, and they weren't going to beat Georgia last night. So Miller being out, not a problem, not a factor. It was not going to change anything. Georgia outgained this team by over 400 yards. The discrepancy in the statistics is mind-boggling for a high-profile football game. High-profile football game. And here's the other thing. If you had taken an FCS school and you had put them in Athens, like you do in the regular season, Kent State actually played Georgia rather tough. But if you had taken any school that's looking for a paycheck, right, and sent them to Athens and Georgia played them, Georgia would have put up a bunch of points, made their fans happy. They would have said, all right, but they would have backed off. 50-something to 7, backed off. That school last night, this is just my little theory. I think they knew that the team that has scored more points than anybody in a championship game setting since we started playing around with this national championship game. So this is before the bowl system and everybody deciding who won the national championship based on the bowls. Once we kicked in this 1-versus-2 playoff system as well, BCS all the way to here, the team that scored the most points against anybody in a national championship game setting was Alabama, 52 points. And I will bet my life that somebody on that Georgia staff knew that. And they wanted to have more points than Alabama in a national championship setting, because that's how it works sometimes. That's how the ego works sometimes.
That's not being petty, right?
No, yeah, right? No. If you're Kirby Smart, you reach a point where you say, okay, there's two things going on here. One of the reasons that, you know, look, don't get me wrong, teams run up scores on FCS schools all the time. But what you do sometimes is you go, look, I'm putting in some kids. And when they get the ball, they're going to want to score. So if they score, if our third string running back scores on you, there's nothing I can do about it. I'm not telling them, but we're not throwing, right? We're not going to throw the ball. We're not going for it on fourth down. We're not doing any of that stuff. Maybe we'll call off the blitzing. There's a mutual respect where you say at some point we're going to stop. But if you still can't stop us, I'm not going to tell my kids who have never played all season long when they get a chance to touch the football not to score. They have families. They have fans in the stands. They're going to want their moment. So if you can't stop them, I can't help you. But I'm not going to start my starters anymore. I think in this particular game, I think it was Branson Robinson. He scored twice in the fourth quarter because nobody could touch him. Nobody could touch him. And so I think Georgia knew that they could continue to score. They scored, and then they said, all right, that's it. That's it. We got our points. We have enough. We're done. Stetson Bennett was out of the game, got his standing ovation. Everybody was cheering for him. But also at the point of when you're writing a check to somebody, you sort of have a little bit of respect. But in that setting, you don't have to. You don't have to treat TCU like Little Sisters of the Poor. You don't have to treat them like a small school just vying for attention. That's a Big 12 program. That's a nationally ranked program. That's a school that had a Heisman Trophy finalist at quarterback. You don't owe them any level of respect. You can beat them 65-7 and not feel bad about it one second. because I've said this many times. I think the one thing that drives me crazy, and I wish we would stop doing it, is that we get a school like TCU that comes out of nowhere, right? And they get to a point where they're on a high profile stage, right? And then we go, you know what? I think they could win. I like them. I really like them. I like the way they play defense. And you know what? I don't care that there may be out their star running back. The guys that are coming in have just as much value, and Max Duggan is just a guy I believe in. Then the game gets out of hand, and those same analysts are like, yeah, you know what? No one should think TCU, that's just a great accomplishment to be here in the first place. You know, they should be really proud of themselves. Yeah, playing a Georgia team is a tough task. No, you believed in them before kickoff, and then when you saw the utter dominance on one side of the ball, now it's let's feel sorry. I put this out on Twitter last night. I don't feel sorry for TCU. Why should I feel sorry for TCU? They earned the right to be here. They didn't win the lottery. Their name wasn't drawn from a hat. There was a process. They went through the process. They got to the national championship game. They earned that right to be there. There's no sympathy card here. You got rolled. That's how it works. I didn't feel bad for the Broncos when they lost to San Francisco by a trillion points. I didn't feel bad for the Buffalo Bills when they got romped by the Cowboys in the Super Bowl. I didn't feel bad for any of the AFC teams that got annihilated in the Super Bowl. Why should I? TCU is a Big 12 school. They're a nationally ranked school. They just got walloped by an SEC school in the national championship game. There's no sympathy. You know, you played hard, you lost, and you lost by a ton. All right, we'll continue to print this game. We'll look ahead to the playoffs as we continue. Tony D, Ron Culver, it's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is Wake Up Call on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. If you're new to the show because of our new time slot this week, I'm glad you could be with us. Give the show a good taste before you decide. We have a lot of fun, but, you know, we hope it's to your liking. Not like last night's game. I wonder how many casual college football fans went, oh, yuck, I knew this was going to happen, click.
The second half largely was in the background.
Yeah,
for me,
exactly.
It was just, I deep down I knew Georgia was going to win. There was hope that like, oh man, maybe TCU could pull this out. I got excited when found out like Danian Tomlinson was going to be on the sideline. I was like, oh, Chargers,
sure,
Chargers connection. Let's do it for LT. Nah, it was over before it started.
Well, when Max Duggan scored and it was 10-7, I thought, well, all right, here we go.
We had talked about it yesterday that, if they're able to keep pace with them, you score, we score, you score, we score.
It was just too easy. It was just too easy. And here was the thing. Ladd McConkey is a three-star recruit out of Georgia. He was not a five-star recruit. Stetson Bennett is a guy that they told would not start at Georgia. He went the JUCO route, came back, walked on. Kirby Smart is going to get the Brock Bowers of the world, like the five-star national guys that everybody wants. Kirby Smart's going to be in the mix for those kind of players, but he also is able to take guys that are not getting looked at around the country and turn them into great players for him, great important role players for him, if anything. Look, I think people were saying, look, when you send 15 people to the NFL like they did last year, then there was going to be a feeling like, all right, Alabama wasn't that far off winning the national championship game last year. So you lost 15 players in the NFL. Maybe I think Alabama in the preseason poll. Sue me. All right. But at the same time, I don't think the disrespect for Georgia was as blatant as Kirby Smart is playing it out to be. I think most people caught on quickly that Georgia was going to be really good this year. Right. So now it brings the question. Okay. So we've got a game. It's 65-7. What does this mean? And there's a couple of questions to dissect here. One, what does it mean for college football? Two, does the 12-team playoff make this better? Three, who's the new king of college football? Is Georgia now the new king of college football, or do you still have to look at Nick Saban in Alabama and go, yeah, okay, let's see how they respond to this? I think the answer to the third one, the one that I just mentioned, is pretty clear. I think right now Georgia is the king because they've won back-to-back national titles, and they've only had one loss in the entire process of this double championship run. And that was to Alabama in the SEC title game. That's it. That's it. Now, Alabama didn't play Georgia this year, and the reason Alabama didn't play Georgia this year is because Alabama couldn't get to Atlanta. Right? But I think to dismiss Alabama and say that now they're on the sidelines is a mistake. But the clear king of the sport now is Kirby Smart in Georgia. And we know in college football, success breeds success, right? That's Alabama. When Nick Saban got there in 2007, it took a couple of years, just a couple, but then they went to Pasadena and beat Texas in the national championship, and then the runs started, where they started winning a bunch of national titles. Kirby Smart is going to do the same thing. There's going to be some real talent coming in. Dabo Swinney had it too, right, where he wins. He finally wins. Remember, Dabo Swinney lost to West Virginia, where the Mountaineers put up 70 points in an Orange Bowl before things started to click with Deshaun Watson and then Trevor Lawrence, right, where Clemson started to become a big, important national caliber machine. That's happening to Georgia. For many of you who are new to the show, my biggest gripe against Georgia for many, many years, Mark Richt, you know, especially, was that Georgia was always good with great talent, but they'd find a way to lose a game they should win, right? They'd lose to South Carolina, for example, or they would lose to maybe Tennessee when Tennessee was not playing particularly well. They would always find a way to lose a game that they should win. And then the national championship back in the old days of the BCS, they weren't part of the equation. Now Kirby Smart is finding a way to win all those games, and now he's rolling along with the number one team in the country. But let's ask the larger question here is this going to get better if we have a 12-team playoff? Well, the answer is no, but it's the fairer way to do it. Okay, if you think it's going to be like college basketball, you're probably wrong, right? You're wrong. Georgia is not going to lose to the 11th team that's coming in, right? Even if the 11th team gets there with a big upset win. College football is just not built with an equalizer, right? In college basketball, you can get a St. Peter's beating a Kentucky because there's an equalizer in the game. That's the three-point shot. You can start hitting those and really hitting those and get hot from there. You can stay with anybody until they can find a way to shut that down. So in college football, there's no equalizer. There's no something that's sort of in the game that everybody can do. And if you do it a little better, you can stay in the game. You have to have athletes and you have to have scheme and you have to have a good game plan and you have to have the ball bounce your way. And we're not going to see a 10 seed in the national championship game. We're not going to see an 8 seed in the national championship game. But that's not the point of having a 12-team playoff. I think that's the key. If everyone's asking, well, would a 12-team playoff make this better? That's the wrong question. The real question should be, would a 12-team playoff make this fairer? And that answer is yes. Because I'll be honest with you, I watched that game last night, and I'm not taking anything away from TCU's process, but where would TCU be if they were in a larger playoff system? Would they have gotten this far? If you gave a second chance to Tennessee, with Joe Milton at quarterback, even with Joe Milton at quarterback, would they have gotten that far? What about Clemson? What about Alabama? What would you do with those teams that didn't get in if you put them through the process of a playoff? So I don't know if the matchup is going to be better, right? And sometimes there's just one team that's way above everybody else. But, and I mean this with all respect to every other conference, Greg Sankey, who's the commissioner of the SEC, he looks at this and the scale of college football, and he won't say this, but he looks at it and he thinks it's everyone else is playing second fiddle to his conference. And rightfully so. When you're a commissioner of the conference, it's like having kids, right? You think your kids, you know, are more special. Greg Sankey thinks his conference is so good at football, it should have its own tournament. I'm not saying that the committee is trying to put different teams in at the expense of SEC schools. Alabama didn't deserve to be in the top four. Tennessee didn't deserve to be in the top four. But you can't stop a playoff system from putting SEC teams in a game like that against each other, if that's how it goes. So that's why I don't think that a 12-team college football playoff is going to be worse than what we saw last night. I think when you allow a team like Alabama or Tennessee a second chance to then make a move in a postseason, you are going to get them playing TCU in an Orange Bowl setting in round two. And maybe the task of TCU to get to the finals is a lot harder. The one thing that is going to bother a lot of schools is this. There's no way to get parity in college football. There's none. There's no NFL system here. There's no salary cap. There's no draft picks. There's nothing. The rich get richer all the time. That's the way it is. If every five-star recruit wants to go play for Deion Sanders at Colorado, that can happen. If everybody wants to go play at Georgia, that can happen. If everybody wants to go play in Alabama or Tennessee, that can happen. And there's no interest in anybody to create a system of parity, because we're not talking about athletics, we're talking about education. You can't tell an athlete he can't go to a school. And you can say, well, we can limit scholarships. If that kid's family's got money and he wants to play at Tennessee and pay his own dime, he can do that. And with NIL, they can do that. You can't tell an athlete he can't get his education at a particular institution. You can be in the NFL and tell a guy he can't play at he can't sign with Green Bay because Green Bay's got no cap money. But you can't tell Brock Bowers out of California that he can't play at Georgia because there's some rule in place that limits scholarships to better programs. If Bowers wants to play at Georgia, there's somebody that's going to give him money for his education to go play at Georgia, or if he doesn't pay for it himself. That being said, it's going to be tougher for schools like TCU to be in that setting that they saw last night. And that might be the demoralizing factor for a lot of schools around the country.
This is Brett Musburger, and you are listening live to Wake Up Call on SportsMap Radio with my main man, Tony D.
All right, Jerry Palm's going to join us from CBS Sports. That is coming up. What are we doing with our new clock at 45
minutes?
Now? 15 minutes. Listen to me. I was like, you told me earlier, I just gave a little inside radio. This is a funny story. Okay, this is a funny story. So we were on mornings from 7 to 11.
7 to 10.
7 to 10.
There's 7,
and
to,
so
7 to 11.
You
you're
told
right.
me that Jerry Palm was on at 8:40. We're in Central Time Zone.
Yeah.
So you told me that Jerry Palm was on at 8:40. So I said hour 3, and you said no, hour 1.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, and this is our second day on this new time slot, and so I put it in the outline for the third hour.
Yep.
So because that's what I do, because I'm dumb. That's what I do. So.
Well, no, Jerry, there's no dumb with that. I mean,
no.
5 years of being, on from 6 to 10 Eastern Time. Right. That's what we're used to.
It trains my brain
yes.
in a particular way. Exactly. So Jerry Palm's coming up
7
in 15
to
minutes.
11 yeah. Eastern time.
I've already forgotten.
Yeah.
Did you by any chance last night partake in any of the multicasts that ESPN
no,
was having last
I totally
night?
Missed. I should have flipped Woo. Over because the game was boring, and maybe I should have taken in something else.
Yeah. So they had a whole bunch. It was like a menu of games that you could watch the game in different ways. So you could watch Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler, yep, if that's what you wanted.
With the traditional broadcast.
There was a broadcast that had the Georgia radio, and I think that was on the SEC network. I think the SEC network had the Georgia radio synced in perfectly with their calls. So if you were interested in that angle, you could go down. TCU's home broadcast was on another channel. You had the Pat McAfee crew. They, yep, were on the sidelines for one of the other angles. What was else? There was, I think it was a coach's show where they're like coaches going, hey, look at that, yeah, wheel route, and it didn't quite work out as well as they thought it was going to be. Look at the A-gap. The A-gap splits. If you're into that kind of analysis, they had that for you.
And honestly, I mean, that's probably the best thing that ESPN could have done.
Because that game was
uneventful.
There was somebody brilliant decided, look, people may not want to leave this game, but they may not want the traditional broadcast. At one point, Herbstreit and Fowler were talking about Colorado because Fowler went to Colorado, and they were just like, what do we do? What do we do?
Yeah.
Like, and I've been in that position before, especially in the high school play-by-play level, where you're getting like, it's like 48-3, and there's like, you can only do so much down and distance before you just like, this is where are we going with this. Like,
I literally,
you want to talk about something else and maybe, you know.
Last night, I was doing the dishes while the game was on, and a thought came through my mind, was like, you know what I should do? Well, Tony is talking about the game, recapping the game, giving his thoughts on the game. I should go, Tony, breaking news. Georgia just scored again.
Right, yeah, exactly. That was all that was.
That's what it was.
That's what it was. Now, I mean, look. Could you make the case maybe that TCU's the moment was just too big for them? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know if it's that easy.
But in the same breath,
it's you know what it is when people say that, it sort of disrespects in a way what Georgia just did to them.
Right. But in
like
the same
to say
breath,
like, well, if they had understood the moment, we would have had a close game last night.
Yeah, but I don't want to sit here today going Georgia that is the most dominating team college football has ever seen.
Right,
because
right.
They just threw down. They just had an epic beatdown on the national stage in the national championship game. I can't sit there and say that. You know, yeah, this team is put it up against any other college football team.
Right.
You know, that's won the national title. This is better than I can't do that.
No, because we just not that long ago LSU was rolling through everybody.
Exactly.
With Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, and that was one of the most incredible football teams I'd ever seen. I thought the Trevor Lawrence freshman year team,
yep,
that beat Alabama and Santa Clara. I thought that team was absolutely fantastic and loaded on both sides of the ball too.
It is impressive with this team to realize like how many starters they lost last year to the draft, and I mean went undefeated this year.
Exactly. Philip on Twitter, ESPN News had the broadcast with no commentary. You heard the PA announcer announcing plays in the stadium, but there was no traditional commentary. Yeah, I did see that.
I should have just went channel surfing.
Yeah, I should have just seen what everything was like. Yeah.
Because that's a perfect game for it. I mean, what am I going to miss? A score? While I'm flipping channels, it's like, oh, wait, this channel had them at 31. Now they're at 38. How'd that happen?
Let me just say this. If you get a Super Bowl, okay, and we've had blowouts in Super Bowls.
Oh, yeah.
Real bad. We've had bad Super Bowl blowouts.
Like, almost 13 in a row.
But when you're dealing, when you're dealing with teams that are operating on an equal playing field, meaning the operations are equal, right? Not talent. I mean, just we draft, we salary cap, all of those things. Then you can legitimately come back on a day like this and go, okay, the Buffalo Bills got beat by the Cowboys. All right, my better one is the 49ers over the Broncos, right? The 55-10 game, Super Bowl 24. You could go, all right, 49ers did this, this, and this, and the Broncos didn't do this, this, and this. But nobody would say the Broncos didn't deserve to be there. And no one would say the Broncos, you know, their magical run came to an end, because we're dealing with, a system that is run by one entity that it gives equal playing field, and you have as good a chance of landing talent as the next team. It's just that when the game plays, sometimes the game gets out of hand, and that's just what happens. You get a blowout, right? You find yourself trailing, you press, you're then prone to mistakes, and that just happens. But it's legitimate to dissect the performance of a losing team of a Super Bowl in a blowout setting to say, hey, what did go wrong? Right, you went into this game, even though the Niners have Joe Montana and they have Jerry Rice, right? And you have John Elway and the three amigos. What went wrong, right? In college football, this happens all the time where one team dominates another. Usually occurs in the semifinals where one team dominates the other. And instead of saying to the other team, what the hell happened? You go, well, you know, you should just be proud you were there in the first place. Like, if that's the way the sport is going to be, I welcome a playoff system where we might get something closer to the way we talk about Super Bowl blowouts than talk about a blowout last night. Right? Instead of saying to Sonny Dykes, hey, why can't you keep up with Georgia? Nobody at the end of the game thought they could. At the end of the game, there was a realization to anybody that picked TCU, whoa, I misread this by a mile. There wasn't one thing that got out of hand for TCU. They didn't lose Max Duggan in the first play of the game. Like they didn't. There wasn't something you could point to that goes, well, you want to know why 65-7? That's the thing that happened right there. There was nothing. It was one team had way better talent than the other team, and the other team's clock just went bong, and that was it. Now, if college football wants to get to a point where you are at a Super Bowl, where if it's close, if it's a blowout, the analytics of the game can be dissected because you'd want to know, wait, these are two really good teams in an equal operational field. While one team may have the best player in the game, an MVP, et cetera, the other team's no slouch. So why did it get out of hand? Nobody is discussing why it got out of hand last night other than you see for yourself how good the SEC is. Well, how about this? Instead of saying how good the SEC is, why don't you just say how good Georgia is? Why don't you just say how good Kirby Smart in Georgia is? Because they recruited well, but they also got kids like Stetson Bennett and Ladd McConkey was saying earlier that were not superstar recruits, and they turned them into stars. What is Stetson Bennett's life going to be like from this point on at, what is he, 47, 48 years old?
Something like that, yeah.
To the time he leaves the earth. He is a Georgia icon.
It is fun. I love how you said, you know, it's like, why do we have to say the SEC is good? Why can't we just say Georgia's good? Because SEC fan needs to be a part of this.
Let me tell you right now.
Right?
I don't know. I never lived in Big Ten country. I've lived a little bit in Big 12 country when Colorado was in it, and then they moved to the Pac-12. But I've never lived in Texas. I've never lived in Michigan. But does the same argument happen in those areas of the country where you go, well, I'll root for the SEC. I don't like Georgia, but I'm rooting for the conference. That happens every day here.
Yep.
That happens all the time.
Because it's not just a win for Georgia. It's a win for the best conference in the United States.
There is a pride to the conference that is unparalleled. I got to think it's unparalleled. Now, again, I haven't immersed myself into the Texas culture, but does Texas pull for Baylor if Baylor has a shot at doing something awesome?
Yeah, one thing, the narrative I was hearing yesterday was were people pulling for Texas Christian University because right. Texas.
Sure.
You know, they'll never pull for TCU again. But, I mean, that's why Mattress Mac put all that money on it because it was a Texas school.
That's right.
Texas, so, you know, Texas roots for Texas.
And by the way, you now have to worry about you told your wife correctly.
I'm so happy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, because we would have realized that 2 minutes into the game. Like, oh, man.
Oh, boy.
Because we got to pay that bill.
All right. Jerry Palm next from CBS Sports discussing last night's game. And then we will get to the NFL playoffs that are coming up this weekend. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call. SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I didn't think the college football gods were going to give us three awesome playoff games, but nevertheless, 65-7, Georgia wins the national championship. Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, on our Progressive guest line, and our guest line is sponsored by Progressive. Drivers who can switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Call or click today to find out what we can do to save you hundreds on your car insurance. That is Progressive. All right, Jerry, how you doing, my man?
I'm all right. How are you?
You know, I wish we could talk about like a last second play or whether they called the right play at the end or whatnot. There's really nothing to dissect on the field other than the dominance by Georgia. But give me your thoughts on what this win means for Georgia and their history in college football.
Well, you know, the repeat champions, that hasn't been done since Alabama did it back in the BCS era. And now they've got a chance to be the second team ever to go for three. Minnesota in the mid-30s won three in a row, the last of which was the first of the AP poll era. So it's been a long time since somebody won three national championships in college football, and Georgia's in a position to do that and going to be equipped to make that kind of run.
Kirby Smart has been not only takes a guy like Brock Bowers, for example, a nationally recruited guy, but he's also turned stars of Stetson Bennett. And even Ladd McConkey wasn't a huge recruit coming out of his hometown of Georgia. How has Smart been able to balance this? How is he able to make guys names and as well as utilizing the super talent that comes into his program?
Well, part of that is guys just develop. Like Stetson Bennett is 75 years old, so he's been playing
quarterback,
25 years old. But he's been playing quarterback for a long time, so you have time to develop. And, you know, this kind of thing, by the way, happens in programs other than just Georgia. You know, you find a diamond in the rough, a guy whose recruiting rankings might not match his actual ability, you know, because those guys make mistakes sometimes too. And
sure.
And or you just get guys that, you know, through their own hard work, are able to, and good coaching, of course, usually like position coaches in particular, you know, develop into, you know, very productive players. And it's, you know, obviously Stetson Bennett will walk on to Heisman finalists. So, you know, it's everybody's got guys like that, maybe not Heisman finalists, you know, but guys that turned into something that was unexpected. And for Georgia, it's been, you know, some key players that have, you know, led them to championships that had that kind of thing.
Are you ready to coronate Georgia now as the new college football face? I mean, yeah, it's easy to do, but Nick Saban and Alabama weren't that far off.
No. Well, I mean, yes, Georgia is definitely the top program right now. I mean, it's undeniable. They've won two straight titles. You can't really say they're not. Now, that doesn't mean there are challengers that are certainly worthy challengers, and, you know, they may not be the top program next year. But at least in terms of the quality of the program over time, you have to say that Georgia is the number one right now. But there are certainly challengers. You know, next year, Alabama will be back. They have the number one recruiting class again. So, you know, it's not like talent's a problem at Alabama. Ohio State will be back. Michigan will probably be back. USC will be back with the Heisman winner, Caleb Williams, and another good recruiting class. And these guys also, all of these guys, you know how to fill in gaps through the transfer portal. So, you know, those are probably the top five programs right now. And those guys will be near the top of the rankings again next year.
This is might be a tough question here, but this game last night got so out of hand and so quickly, and the disparity on the field between the talent was really noticeable. Is there a larger picture here, Jerry, about where the sport is? Or is it just one school that is just dominant and that's just the way it is? Or is there something that might get fixed with a 12-team playoff? Or how did you take 65-7 in the most high-profile game of the season? What do we do with that?
You don't overreact to it, because 65-7 can only happen if one team's, you know, playing really well and the other team is really off. And,
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like TCU was that bad all year, right? It would have shown up before now. So they picked a bad day to have a bad day and a bad team to do it against. And that just kind of snowballed, and that can happen sometimes. It's unfortunate that it happens in a championship game, but you can't say, oh, gosh, TCU was awful all year long. They must have been, and everybody they played was worse. And I mean, that's just an overreaction. It was just a bad day. Georgia's better than TCU. TCU had a great season that deserves to be celebrated and probably deserved a better ending than it got, but that's just how it goes sometimes. But your general question, the talent, the high-level talent, has been concentrated in just a handful of programs recently. And I think the 12-team playoff is going to make that disperse a little bit, because, you know, the high-level guys want to play in the playoff.
Right.
They only have a few choices right now if they want to play in the playoff. Well, now you're going to have many more choices of teams that are playoff quality or potentially playoff quality And I think it'll help that high-level talent disperse a little bit.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking, like, look, maybe it doesn't help in terms of we could still get blowouts at the higher level.
Oh, yeah.
But at least you have a process that might make it a little tighter.
Yeah, I mean, blowouts are just – I mean, that's a very small thing, you know, data point. Really, it's like I said, when you've got quality teams that play each other and you get a result that doesn't really match the difference in the quality, then it's you throw out the result in terms of trying to, the score, in terms of trying to evaluate the quality of these teams.
When, you know, I was always saying in college football, sometimes there are just a few guys who have been able to do something so spectacular that it elevates them and it puts them on the higher upper echelon of history. I always say, like, when Heisman voters vote, and they vote, they have a chance to vote for a guy to win his second Heisman, they are going to be thinking, is this guy deserve a level that's above a lot of these players? Is Stetson Bennett there with this back-to-back? Will he be the guy we look back 20 years from now and say he was one of the best to do it?
I don't know, because he was perfect for his team. You know, it's
that's a great way to put that.
Because you look at, you know, elite level quarterbacks. So, you know, the guys that kind of play in the guys that the NFL really wants. And for some reason, probably because of athleticism, he's not one of those guys that the NFL guys are really craving. But he's on a really good team. He's a very smart player. He doesn't make mistakes, and he can deliver the ball in some tight windows. So, you know, that he was perfect for this team. He may not be perfect for the NFL. But, you know, Georgia fans are going to look back and say, hey, he's the guy who led us to two championships. That's always – you'll never be able to take that away from him.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, again, a 65-7 win by Georgia last night. Really appreciate your time as always, Jerry. Thank you so much.
Sure, thanks.
Yeah, I think you put it right. I mean, look, yesterday there was a bunch of news about the Heisman – not the Heisman, I'm sorry, Hall of Fame, and Tim Tebow, Reggie Bush. But Tim Tebow is being inducted. Now, if you watched Tim Tebow play – in college, if you were right there in the thick of it, he was one of the greatest college football players of all time. He's probably, as much as I hate to say it because I rooted against him for so long, he's the best college football I've ever seen. Best college football player I've ever seen. A quarterback that could throw the ball at the time. And, you know, you can make his arguments about mechanics, but he certainly had the ability to run the ball, get first downs. He was gritty. The speech, the ability to overcome that loss and win the national championship, all of those things. He was part of two national championships teams, but he was the sort of X guy, right, in the first one. Chris Leak was the quarterback at Florida. So Tim Tebow wasn't the quarterback that won two Florida championships in that short amount of time. But it was undeniable that he was one of the elite college football players that would go down in history. I started thinking about that with Stetson Bennett last night. It's going, look, how will we process him? How will we look at him? Right? Very few quarterbacks win two national championships in the history of college football, right? I mean, I'm talking starting quarterbacks. He's one of them. And he's doing so in a different day and age, right? He's doing it with an actual BCS, you know, whether it was the BCS year or the national championship playoff, right? This sort of different era that we have than when we talked about yesterday about a time where you would play, you'd win the Sugar Bowl, and a bunch of people said, and oh, by the way, yeah, we voted you national champions. When you are in a process where the national championship is yours for the taking, meaning it's not coming from votes. It's not coming from you saying, we're just going to play and whatever happens. Meaning, here's the process, guys. Whether it was the old BCS formula where we said the computers have spit out you and somebody else and you guys are playing for the title, or the selection committee has spitted you and three other teams and you'll be in a little playoff, or now when we go down in the future, 12 teams. I'm telling you right now, I think Stetson Bennett, it's a good possibility that Stetson Bennett is the last quarterback in my lifetime. If I live for another 40 years, I think he's the last quarterback in my lifetime to win back-to-back titles. I think with you have 12, I think the impossibility of it becomes even more great. To ask a team that everyone's going to be gunning for to try to do it again in a 12-team playoff, that is going to be really, really hard to do. If I'm a betting guy, I'm betting that this is the last time you see it. Now, next year he's got a chance for three, and then they push out. Georgia has a chance for three. But we may not see a team do this or even a quarterback do this for the rest of our lifetimes.